When Tony Fernandez acquired AirAsia, it was a failing airline. Fernandez took a struggling business and transformed it into Asia's first budget carrier. He put a stamp on the democratization of air travel in Asia. As embedded within the brand of AirAsia's tagline, now everyone can fly. Of course, in the process, Tony Fernandez created a multi-billion dollar publicly listed company. One of the best areas of the book, seeing how Tony Fernandez makes important life-changing decisions, like when he decided to leave a salaried job.
I got so frustrated working for Time Warner, which became AOL Time Warner, that I thought there must be more to life than this.
Coming up, why does Tony Fernandez say, I run my own business better than I run my own finances? What are his plans to turn AirAsia into a digital airline? But first, why at the young age of 53 has Tony Fernandez decided to write and release his memoirs?
After The Apprentice, many people asked me to do a book, and I didn't take it very seriously. So I thought, who would be interested in reading my book? And then Penguin made an offer, and I've always liked Penguin. So I said, okay. And then I did nothing about it. And then last year, Penguin reminded me and said, we kind of paid you some money and you haven't actually done anything on the book. So I got cracking on it. And over the last 6 months, we put it together.
Are you a reader yourself?
I love the internet, short articles, but I haven't read a full novel. No, there was a period in my life where I went through all the Wilbur Smiths and Jeffrey Archers, but I haven't picked up a book for a long time.
Well, your book Flying High is fascinating because of the anecdotes in it. Can you take us back to that pivotal moment? Help us understand how you make choices as an entrepreneur. So you're about to pick up AirAsia. It's a failing airline with two airplanes in its fleet. And you're about to pick it up for less than 2 ringgit. What went into the matrix of decision-making at that point in time for you? So you get to a point where you say, yes, I am going to do this.
That's a really good question for entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs. When you're in, there are two types of people. There are people who are entrepreneurs from the get-go, right? They just say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and I'm not going to work for anyone else. And then there are a bunch of us who, I fall into that category, where I worked in the corporate life. And you become very, you know, it's very hard to leave that comfortable corporate life, right? Guaranteed salary, going up the corporate ladder, flying first class everywhere and whining and dining. But I got so frustrated working for Time Warner, which became AOL Time Warner, that I thought there must be more to life than this. And I decided to quit before I knew what I was going to do. I just was very frustrated and I didn't want to take someone's salary and criticize the company. So I quit in New York. I was flying back and I was sitting in a bar having a Ribena. And I saw Stelios of EasyJet on TV, and I thought, wow, I've always wanted to own an airline. This looks a fantastic concept. Now, there's a very fine line between brilliance and stupidity. It's very narrow.
Funny you should raise that. Didn't Richard Branson tell you at the time it was a stupid idea?
Yeah, and I told him it was a stupid idea when he started Virgin Atlantic. So it's very, very narrow. And I just thought, well, I was 30-odd at the time. Just do it. Hopefully that kind of inspires a few people. There's nothing special about me. I had an idea. I didn't have much money. And I just did it. Now, maybe I didn't know enough. And maybe if I knew all the problems of starting an airline, I may not have done it. Maybe there's a bit of naivety. But I just felt it was a great idea. And I wanted to own my company. I wanted to treat people better than I was treated in my last job, and so I just did it. Even talking about it now, it sounds so ridiculous to go from Warner Music to quitting a job. Yeah, quitting a job and not a lot of money, going to start an airline. Even when I'm saying it, sounds kind of bizarre. Yeah, I just felt it was a great idea.
You're one of Time Magazine's 100 influential people. When it comes to the realm of influence, moving people, which entrepreneurs have to do, what guides you?
Communication. I just interviewed someone on the plane just now. I was thinking, oh, what a crazy life I live. Poor guy had to fly with me to Singapore because there was no time. And I interviewed him on the plane. And I said one of the biggest abilities I have, if I have any abilities, is to persuade people to do things and to motivate people to maybe even do things they didn't think they were capable of doing. And I suppose it's just communication, sitting down and talking to people and one, understanding them. My strength is I love people. You can put me anywhere and I'll get on with anyone, right? I'm actually quite a shy, introverted person, but once I get to know a person, I'm completely opposite. So I think the ability to communicate at any level has been my strength in being able to move people in the direction I want them to go.
My book in focus today, Tony Fernandez's memoir, Flying High. How hands-on is Tony Fernandez with his business these days? Does he still take on the role of crew member once in a while, surprising all on board?
Yeah, I don't do it as crew anymore because it causes pandemonium on the plane. Yeah, correct. I mean, I went the other day and I picked up rubbish. And that became a monstrous story. You know, I was just helping out the crew because I could see that they were running late on a few things. So I said, I'll pick up the rubbish. But it caused more pandemonium than probably help in the long run. So I don't do it. But I walk the talk in that I think management and leadership is not just sitting in your office. It's about going down and meeting the staff and seeing how things are. I love that. I love walking around the plane, talking to my passengers. I love going to the airport, and I love meeting my staff. So, yeah, I still do it, but I don't do the jobs anymore because it causes them more hassle than good.
Let's talk more about how hands-on you are in the business. The crash of Air Asia 8501 into the Java Sea in 2014 killed all 162 people on board. It was a preventable crash. How did that tragedy change the way you ran Air Asia?
Well, it was a period in my life that I was thinking maybe I would move on to something else. I was doing other things. And you know, obviously that was, and still is, the worst time of my life. And I thought, no, I need to come back and refocus and make sure that AirAsia is the best at whatever it can do. It changed me in two ways. Let's take the personal side first, that life is short. You know, that actually you're here 1 minute and you can go the next minute. And two, I suppose, when you're in an airline, it's different from working in Media Corp in that we really have people's lives in their hands. And it really kind of shook me up badly, like, wow, you know, what do you say to someone who's lost so many people on the plane? But it reinforced my philosophy that openness and transparency and honesty is still the best way. I did it as best as I could and the only way I know. I didn't follow legal opinion or not turn up and be surrounded by lots of people. I stood up and met every single person.
Speaking of openness and transparency, and you're very candid in the book about your belief in openness being important, one of the main obstacles for leaders, as laid out in the Global Competitiveness Report, is corruption being an issue in Malaysia. As a very successful businessman, how do you deal with this?
We just don't do it. And I think there are myths as well in ASEAN that you need to bribe people and do things. That's not the case. In AirAsia, we've never had to do it. I've never been asked, actually. So sometimes it's probably made out to be bigger than it actually is in reality, but I certainly haven't had to confront it. Or maybe I'm very lucky, I don't know, but we haven't had to confront it.
Well, speaking of myths and reality, I mean, yeah. Fairly recently there was media reports of the plane that plunged 20,000 feet in a short span of time. And you came out and you said those reports were incorrect. This was a controlled descent. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first time in my life I felt I was like Donald Trump. And it's the only time, please, that I felt, God, there is a lot of fake news out there. It was twisted and turned and spun. Ironically, it always happens in Australia, where, you know, the media are fairly loyal to one or two airlines. It happens on every airline, a decompression. Our pilots are trained for it, our crew are trained for it. And in fact, our crew were just being firm and saying, sit down, put the oxygen mask, and it got twisted into they were screaming. No such thing. And we hear the audio. They were, and in fact, the videos that some of the passengers released show that. And it didn't plunge. It was the pilots saw the decompression and brought it down to a safe level and returned the aircraft safely. So this is the good and bad of AirAsia, in that we get publicity for anything on good, but we also get blown out of proportion on bad. But we got to manage it and deal with it. There was a video circulating around on people stealing luggage from the plane, and everyone was sending it to me in the cargo hold and saying, oh, this is AirAsia. And I looked at it, I said, this doesn't look like our star for a start. And we went and looked at it, it was Jetstar. In Thailand, and the staff got caught and terminated. So this is the pros and minuses of social media, and I can sometimes sympathize with leaders around the world because there is a lot of news that is inaccurate.
You used social media to start marketing AirAsia at the beginning, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you now have to create a separate department to deal with the misinformation. I think that's not just in AirAsia. I think everywhere, governments everywhere have to deal with that, politicians, etc. But I still think social media is good for the world. And I think it makes people accountable. It makes us accountable, you know, because, hey, anything goes wrong, it's there straight away, right? And you can't run away from it. I still like social media because you've got a direct relationship with your customer. You know, if you look at AirAsia's Facebook, there are a lot of complaints on there as well. Now, if you take the number of complaints versus the number of people that fly with us, it's very small. We don't hide from it. We don't delete it. You know, I tell my staff, this is free market research. People have written to you to tell you you're screwed up. Other companies pay millions of dollars to consultants to tell them the same thing. So use it and don't hide from it. Don't be defensive. Use it to be better.
So you're number 37 on Malaysia's rich list.
Oh, really? I was told the other day. I didn't actually look at it. Fairly meaningless, these things.
Let's talk about spending. It's interesting in your book that you say you are better at controlling money as a businessman than in your personal life.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I was a businessman, I wouldn't have started a Formula One team, right? I mean, I wouldn't have got AirAsia to invest in a Formula One team or a football club. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, and there are many people who would like to drive that bus, I have lived a great life. I've done everything I wanted to do.
Are you an emotional spender?
Yeah.
When it comes to money?
Definitely. I don't sit there and calculate and look at it. But I'm impulsive on most things in life. I'm not someone who calculates and evaluates and looks at things in hundreds of ways and consults loads and loads of people. I do a lot of things from the heart.
What change would you like to see when it comes to airports in the region?
Well, no, we don't own low-cost airports. We want to stay focused, but we'd like entrepreneurs to go build low-cost airports. You know, you've got private ports, you've got private roads, you've got private train stations, power stations.
So you're not going to be involved in that?
No, but what we're going to do is, similar to this place, is if you open an airport and you know AirAsia is coming to it and giving you this business, you're going to be much more comfortable putting the money in to build an airport. So we're trying to persuade governments that it's time to privatize airports, to open and bring in new money, and to create a different model. One airport doesn't fit all, right? So you have a Mandarin Oriental, you have a Tune Hotel, you have a Rolls Royce, you have a much cheaper car. We don't need the super facilities that SIA needs, you know, for their first class passengers or their business. Our passengers just want to get to A to B at the cheapest possible price, and that includes airport tax, that includes taxi fare, everything. So at every part of the travel chain, we want to make it as affordable as possible, and airports play a big part in charges. So we'd like entrepreneurs to go build low-cost terminals.
What are your plans to turn AirAsia into a digital airline?
Yeah, okay. Great question. Really good questions, by the way. Maybe you should come work for us.
Yes.
It made me think when Uber was worth like 20 times what we are worth, yet we make money and they don't. And I began to look at it, and then you begin to see the power of the digital revolution. Now, what do we have? All these years we've been fixated with oil. But we have actually a phenomenal business in data. We have fantastic data. Travel data is very rich. And so I am so excited by this digital revolution. You know, I just spent the second half of the plane journey was with a data company. And in fact, in this building, we've invested in a data company called Big Data for Humans. We believe data will change our business in so many ways, and we can do it quicker than other businesses because we have a lot of data already. So over the last 2 years, we've been refining that data. And so there are three chunks when I say digital. There's the whole consumer side. So making sure that when you go into AirAsia.com, we're giving you what you want. And at any point in the journey, we can sell different things to you that you want, and it's easy for you to buy. And as we get to know you better and better and better, we'll know what you really like. Then there's the whole operational data. We've now put 24,000 sensors onto our aircraft, and so we know everything about the aircraft. And we'll begin to predict predictive maintenance. We'll be able to see how we burn fuel in certain places, turnarounds, etc. So there'll be a lot of cost saving. And finally, HR data. We'll begin to know from 2,000 cabin crew that we have who are the best ones, what kind of backgrounds they come from, the schools, etc., etc. You know, ironically, from a simple little data experiment, we found our cabin crew who are taking calling in sick. We also managed to tie in that they bought an ID90 ticket as well. So, So there are lots of weird applications. But and then the whole customer experience. I think the worst experience is the airport. We have to go through security, and you know. So we think the face is the new email. So we'd like to register everyone's face. You just board with your face, facial recognition. We're already testing it out. You just board with your face. We want a permanent bag tag, so you never have to worry about checking in. But it's on there. We know your flight. The tag will automatically recognize your bag. So there are a whole lot of things that are coming up. Payment with your thumb, payment with your face. Just making it easier.
And even though he's already achieved so much, are there still mountains that Tony Fernandez would like to scale?
My dad was very left-wing. He believed medicine should be... good medical care should be afforded to everybody, and that money shouldn't be a limiting factor. So the problem is the government can never look after everybody, and private health is very expensive. So I believe there's a model somewhere in there like AirAsia where you focus not on every disease, but 80% of people have 20% of diseases. And so you try and focus, just like AirAsia, we don't do business class, first class, whatever, we just focus on our market. I think if there's a lot of inefficiencies in the hospital delivery system and the pharmacy delivery system, so maybe tied in with data and preventative medicine so that people who look after themselves better get cheaper treatment.
And going beyond insurance in terms of healthcare.
Correct. That's an idea. And I love education. I love being with kids. And I'd love to create a delivery system where you could have a good quality of education without paying through your noses.
His memoir is titled Flying High. I was talking with Tony Fernandez.